Visakha, Sangadayaka, the seventh daughter of King Kiki, was Visakha, the lady who donated Pubarama Vihara to the Sangha. She had been a Sotapanna since the time when, at the age of seven, she heard the Buddha's sermon along with her 500 girlfriends on the occasion of the teacher's visit to the town of Badiya. Later, she moved to Sakita with her parents at the invitation of King Pasanadi. When she came of age, she married the son of the merchant Migara and lived in Sawati. She donated the Pubarama Vihara to the Sangha, served them gruel and morning meals every day at home, provided juice and medicine at the Vihara, and heard their sermons. Of the seven daughters of King Kiki, who practiced chastity, the first six became arahats and attained Nibbana. The last daughter, that is Visakha, in the time of Gautama Buddha, did not attain the higher path of holiness. She died as a Sotapanna and is now the queen of the Deva king, Sunimita, in Nimanarati, the fifth world of Devas. She will attain Anagami stage there, pass through the five Sudarvasa realms successively, and attain Nibbana in Akanita realm as an arahat. So Visakha is now the chief queen in the realm of Nimanarati. The lifespan there is 8,000, which means 2,304 million years on earth. Perhaps it would be boring to enjoy heavenly bliss for so long. When she dies as an Anagami, she will pass on to the lowest of the five Sudarvasa realms, i.e. Avihā realm, where she will become a Brahmā. The Brahmā is neither man nor woman, but takes on the appearance of a majestic male. The Brahmā is free from all sensuous desires. The lifespan there is 1,000 kappas, world cycles. From there, she will go to Atapa, the second Sudarvasa realm. After 2,000 kappas there, she will pass on to Sudassana, the third Sudarvasa realm, where she will live for 40,000 kappas. Then she will live another 4,000 kappas in the fourth Sudarvasa as Sudasi realm. After spending 16,000 kappa years there, she will reach Akanita, the highest Sudarvasa realm, where she will attain Nibbana after a lifespan of 16,000 kappas. All these lifespans add up to 31,000 kappas. That means Visakha will be in the Brahma world for 31,000 kappas before she attains Nibbana. We assume this post-mortem destiny of Visakha on the authority of the commentary on Sakapana Sutta of Digha Nikaya. There it is said that Sakha, the king of Devas, will have Akanita as his last abode. True, no mention is made of his arahatship or attainment of Nibbana there, but existence in Akanita rules out the possibility of rebirth or passage to other realms, and so it means attainment of arahatship and Nibbana there. This is the destiny too of the yogis at the first three stages of the holy path, who have come to Vehapala and Neva Sanya Na Sanya Yatana realms. The same commentary says that this is the destiny which Sakha has in common with Anathapindika and Visakha. some sotapannas, love worldly pleasures or the karmic fruits of their good deeds. They long for worldly bliss, they take delight in it, and they are repeatedly drawn to it. Anathapindika, Visakha, Chularata Deva, Maharata Deva, Aneka Vana Deva, Saka, and Naga Datta Deva. It is said that these seven persons were fond of worldly pleasures and that they will pass through the six heavenly abodes successively, reside in Akanita abode, and attain Nibbana there. It will not be proper to take literally the statement in the commentary about the successive enjoyment of sensual pleasure in six celestial abodes. Perhaps it means the Anagami stage in one or two of the abodes and subsequent passage to Aviha abode. For that is the destiny of Sakha as stated in Sakkapanna Sutta. A Sotapanna like Visakha is not a Sotapanna with seven rebirths at the utmost. Sataka tu parama, nor a Sotapanna passing from one noble family to another, kolang kola. He is also not the one germinating only once more, eka biji. He or she is called Bonzin Zan in Burmese because he or she will enjoy all the heavenly bliss in one abode after another. A Bonzin Zan is so called because according to commentaries on Sangyutta Nikaya and Pugala Panyati, he or she will pass through all the lower celestial abodes as well as the five higher ones successively. Dhammasangani, the first book of Abhidhamma Pitaka, describes the four stages of the holy path as the four abodes, Bhumi. The Aryas who pass through all these abodes may also be labelled Bonzin Zan. This label for such Aryas is more apt because the gradual attainment of the Arya differs from the destiny of the Sotapanna with seven rebirths. The Sotapanna is reborn seven times, and after passing through the three higher stages of the holy path, attains arahatship. This is the destiny too of the other two types of Sotapanna, kolang kola and eka biji. But if by abode, bhumi, we understand the four stages of holiness, the Sotapanna attains anagami stage in one of the celestial realms, passes on to the five Sudhavasa realms, and attains Nibbana in Akanita realm. He is more aptly called Bonzin Zan because of his progressive attainment of the three higher stages or abode of Aryas. These are the stories illustrating the karmic fruits of chastity practiced by men and women. They tell us how chastity leads to material and spiritual progress, how the man or woman who is pledged to chastity enjoys heavenly bliss in succession, how from Deva realms he or she passes on to Sudhavasa or Brahma realms, or how, starting from the ordinary state of a worldling, the successive attainment of the holy stages, together with the supreme goal of arahatship or Nibbana, is possible for the yogi. Therefore, you should vow to practice chastity for spiritual uplift and for the lessening or extinction of defilements. Those who can observe only the five precepts should vow to avoid all kinds of unlawful sexual intercourse. Musawada, telling lies. Other people may speak falsehood, but as disciples of the Buddha, we will avoid it. Thus we should commit ourselves to a practice that lessens defilements. This is the teaching of the Buddha. Here, musa is falsehood, and vada means speaking. Hence, musa, vada, is speaking falsehood or telling lies. You tell a lie if you deny seeing or knowing a thing, when in fact you see or know it. Or if you say you see or know a thing, when in fact you do not see or know it. There are four constituent factors of lying. One, what one says does not accord with reality. Two, the intent to deceive other people. Three, describing falsehood as truth. And four, the statement is accepted as truth by another person who hears it. Making a statement that comprises these four conditions is a karmically effective act of lying. If the act is detrimental to the interests of other people, it may lead to the nether worlds. The karmic gravity or otherwise of lying is determined by the moral and spiritual status of the victim of deception. The higher the spiritual plane of the victim, the more serious is the offence. If the victim is devoid of moral character, lying is not serious. But it is a serious offence if it endangers the interests of another person. The more harmful the offence, the more serious it is. Lying which does not cause harm to others is not karmically grave. According to the commentaries, it does not lead to the lower planes of existence. But a good man completely avoids lying. He will avoid even making a joke based on falsehood. If someone comes and asks you for a loan of something belonging to you, and you do not wish to lend it to him, what will you say? If you say that you do not have the thing, when in fact you have it, you will be lying. But it is not a serious offence, since it is not detrimental to other person. Of course, even as a minor offence, lying should be avoided. If you say frankly that you do not wish to lend anything, you will incur the displeasure of the borrower. Townspeople probably know how to give an evasive reply. Perhaps it would be advisable to tell him that we have just enough for personal needs, that we do not have enough to lend or spare. We should thus avoid lying, even in trivial matters. A man who speaks the truth is trusted and held in high esteem by other people. Importance of truthfulness in giving evidence. Respect for truth is of paramount importance in the settlement of a dispute. In a trial court or in any other place, a witness under interrogation should testify truthfully. Some witnesses tell lies, and so, if a judge disposes of a case on the basis of their false witness, on their false evidence, they are guilty of a very grave offence. A false testimony may lead to imprisonment or execution of an accused in a murder case, or to fine and imprisonment in other criminal cases. It means a great misfortune for the innocent person. The judge who passes the sentence is also not free from guilt. In a court of law, judgment is based on the evidence abduced rather than on a judge's personal knowledge, which is considered irrelevant. The settlement of ecclesiastical disputes in the Buddhist Sangha too rests on the statements of witnesses. So truthfulness on the part of a witness is of utmost importance. A false testimony in a civil dispute makes it difficult for the judge to decide rightfully, and a wrong decision may cause much damage to the rightful owner or claimant, and the presiding authority is not free from responsibility. Arya and Anarya. When examined as a witness, one should speak the truth in regard to what one has seen, heard or found, or what one knows. The witness must be truthful too when he has to testify about what he has not seen, heard or found, or what he does not know. These eight kinds of right speech are called Arya speech, because these are the words of Aryas, the noble ones. The falsehoods uttered by those in regard to what they have seen or not seen, heard or not heard, found or not found, and what they know or do not know are anarya utterances, which mean the words of evil persons. So you should avoid the eight kinds of lying practiced by evildoers, and devote yourselves to eight kinds of right speech practiced by the noble ones. Arya Vohara. Chitu Padavara, etc. Then you should cultivate thoughts about abstention from lying. Chitu Padavara. You should avoid lying through truthfulness. You should resolve to speak the truth for spiritual uplift and for overcoming the defilement of lying, parikamanavara, etc. The Pali term for truth is satcha, a term that is well established in Burmese language. To speak satcha means to avoid telling lies that leads to the lower worlds. It means progressive attainment of heavenly abodes, the Brahma worlds, the four stages of holiness, sotapanna, etc., and the ultimate goal of Nibbana, the complete extinction of all suffering. Karmic results. According to the Buddha's teaching in Anguttara Nikaya, the liar is liable to land in the lower worlds, and if, after release therefrom, he is reborn as a human being, he is likely to face false charges. The karmic results of abstention from lying are, of course, just the opposite. A person who avoids lying is likely to pass on the deva worlds, and on his return to the human world, he will not be subject to malignant accusations, but will be trusted by the public. The commentaries on Kudakapata and Itivutika mention 14 karmic results of speaking the truth. These are 1. Having a mouth that is fragrant, like a lotus flower. 2. Having a set of white, beautiful teeth. 3. Having the power of speech that attracts the attention of other people. 4. Having the power of speech that is persuasive. 5. Having a personality that delights other people. 6. Having clear faculties. 7. Having a mind composed and free from distractions. 8. Having no vanity. 9. having a reddish, soft and thin tongue. 10. Having a well-proportioned body that is not too fat. 11. A body that is not too thin. 12. A body that is not too short. 13. A body that is not too tall. 14. Having the habit of speaking clearly and sweetly. A fragrant mouth, a set of beautiful teeth, the ability to influence others by word of mouth. These are the attributes which everyone wants to possess. So are clear faculties, a mind composed, and so forth. A well-proportioned body is desired by every person. It will not do to have a body that is excessively fat or lean, nor will it do to be abnormally tall or short in stature. Equally important is the ability to speak clearly and sweetly. What we want to say may be fine, but if we cannot speak well, it will not be acceptable to others. A speech marked by circumlocution and confusion will fall on deaf ears. Some speakers are sincere, and what they say is worthy of attention, but the way they speak is so aggressive that it jars on the ears of their listeners. Some are good speakers. Their speeches are clear, precise, orderly, and pleasant. As a result, they appeal to many people and contribute to the attainment of their object. These then are the karmic benefits of truthfulness. Their opposites are, of course, the karmic effects of lying. The evil smell coming out of the mouth of some person may be due to their habit of lying in their previous lives. The same may be said of the discordant and disunited teeth of some people, and so forth. Benefits here and now. Moreover, truthfulness is beneficial, not only after death, but also in the present life. It is said that solemn utterances of truth enables one to walk on water. In the time of the Buddha, King Mahakapina set out with his 1,000 followers to become bhikkhus. On the way, they crossed three large rivers after uttering the truth about the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. It is said that even the hooves of their horses did not get wet. This story illustrating the power of truth may sound like a myth to modern people, but we should consider the story rationally. Today we see planes flying in the air. Spaceships are circumnavigating the Earth. Astronauts have landed on the Moon. If these marvels of our age had been predicted in the lifetime of the Buddha, the people in those days would have dismissed them as myths. In reality, the story of men walking on water is not preposterous if we take into account the possibility that the scientific achievements of modern age might have been paralleled by the psychic powers of the yogis in ancient times. Remedy for poison. Affirmation that something is true can also help to remove poison. This is borne out by the Kanhadipaya Jataka while visiting the house of his lay follower Manadavya. The hermit Kanhadipaya found the man's son lying unconscious as a result of snake bite. The householder appealed to him for help. The hermit said that as he did not know medical treatment, he must rely on affirmation of truth for therapy. And so he declared solemnly, "I was happy as a hermit only for the first 7 days. After that, for 50 years, I have lived the holy life unhappily. Yet in order that nobody may know of my unhappiness, I have never deviated from the holy path." Because of this true statement, may the child be cleared of poison and restored to life. Then the upper part of the child's body was purged of poison, and opening his eyes, the child cried, "Mama, Papa," and fell asleep again. The father then declared as follows, "I do not like giving alms or performing any act of dana. I do not want to see those who ask for alms. Yet I have been giving alms regularly without letting the recipients know my antipathy to dana. May the child rid himself of poison and survive by virtue of this affirmation of truth." The poison above the waist of the child's body was now neutralized, and the child got up and sat. Then the householder told his wife to affirm the truth of something she knew. The Buddha said that she dared not to do so in his presence, but under pressure from her husband, she uttered the following words, "Dear child, I do not love your father any more than I love the snake which has bitten me. May this affirmation of truth make you free from poison and restored to life." Then the child became wholly free of poison. After the child's recovery, his parents and the hermit admonished one another, and the merchant gave alms joyfully and wholeheartedly. His wife treated him affectionately, and the hermit practiced the Dharma with a zest that finally led to the attainment of jhana and psychic powers. This story may sound incredulous to scientists, but it will not be scoffed at by some people in Burma who have seen victims of snake bite cured through mere recitation of gathas and mantras. Cure for disease. The cure of disease through the affirmation of a true statement is mentioned in Visuddhimagga, about 400 years after the Parinibbana of the Buddha. There was in Sri Lanka, Ceylon, a bhikkhu called Mahamitta. The bhikkhu's mother was afflicted by a disease that appeared to be breast cancer. She sent her daughter, who was a bhikkhuni, to her son for medicine. Bhikkhu Mahamitta said, "Since I have no knowledge of conventional medicine, I will give you the medicine of truth. Since my ordination, I have never looked at a woman with lust. May my mother regain her health by virtue of my affirmation of truth. Now, sister, go back to my mother. Repeat what I say and rub her body." The bhikkhuni did as she was told, and her mother was instantly cured of the disease. Spiritual healing. The story may be ridiculed by modern medical doctors who have seen diseases cured only through medication They know that germs cause diseases, and it is hard for them to believe that there is no need for medicine to get rid of germs. But affirmation of truth is certainly one of the methods of treatment for diseases. It is a kind of spiritual healing. At our meditation center, there are many yogis who have recovered from illness through mindfulness of their unpleasant feelings. Some patients consulted doctors who recommended a surgical operation. In order to fortify themselves on the operating table, they came to our center and practiced meditation. In the course of their practice, their power of concentration developed and their diseases subsided automatically. They again consulted the doctor. The doctor examined them, found no symptom of the disease, and was surprised to learn that it was meditation that brought about the cure. There is a variety of diseases that have been so cured, such as gastric troubles, abdominal pains, hypertension, headache. A yogi who had been deaf for many years was able to hear again, and there is a case of the cure of sinusitis of 20 years duration. Mahakasapa and Mahamoggallana recovered from illnesses after hearing the Bojanga Sutta. As for the Buddha, he overcame by meditation an affliction that was so severe as to threaten his life. It is therefore reasonable to believe that there are remedies other than medicines for some diseases.